The story of the Holocaust has been told by many different people in nations around the world.
However, the story is best told by the people who survived it.
Listen closely as we tell the story together.
Every day when we went out, we would see bodies, dead bodies, parts of bodies. And they had these push carts. And they had bodies stacked on these push carts every day up to the hill, taking them somewhere. I don't know where, because I don't remember seeing a grave or anything. I did see this furnace blasting away, and it could smell like the burning of bodies, but at the time I really didn't know where the smell came from. I did not know that there were burning people. There were crematoriums in Auschwitz.
The bodies that Ms. Ruth Kent is describing are some of the nearly 6 million Jewish people who were killed by Adolf Hitler and his Nazi regime during the Holocaust.
Holocaust is the word used to describe the systematic murder of millions of individuals in Europe during World War II.
The fact that the Holocaust was a systematic mass murder gives rise to the fact that Hitler had a plan.
The plan began with discrimination against Jewish people.
At first, Jewish people were required to carry identification cards and wear a Star of David's symbol on their clothing to identify them as Jews. Once they were publicly identified, they were banned from movie theaters, stores, and many other public places.
Next, Jewish children were no longer allowed to attend schools, and the Nazis began to limit when and where Jewish people could go by creating curfews.
Eventually, the Nazis forced the Jews out of their own homes and into the areas known as the ghettos.
All Jewish families began to worry if they would be next.
It was just a question, it's not if, when. They told us, they announced in our village, they would announce they'd go with our drum. They drum, and then they would stop, let's say, every fourth house, or every eighth house, or every tenth house. And people would gather, and he would lead the edict. So he'd lead the edict that by tomorrow, 6 in the morning, all Jewish people, nobody's exempt, has to be in front of their gates with their belongings, and you could only take so much with you, and the rest you have to leave. And then the drum beat played. Of course, we knew already even before the drummer came. And the next morning, we were lined up in front of our homes. Everybody had to be in front of the house. Make sure that all the houses, all the Jewish houses were empty. And as they were satisfied that nobody is hiding and they know each family that is there, now you're marching to the city hall, to handle with valuables and to be searched for valuables.
People were not sure where they were being taken, but they knew wherever it was would not be good.
Stripped of all their worldly possessions and not knowing where they were being taken, fear and sorrow began to set in.
Yeah, I know that there's big trouble, and I know we're not going to any resort or anything, and I know my mother is crying, just crying and crying and crying, and I wanted to cry with her, and I really felt I should, and then finally it came, and I did cry with her, and I felt so good that I'm really sharing her sorrows with her.
Life in the ghetto was harsh. The ghettos were overcrowded. Sometimes there were 7 or 8 families in one apartment with broken bathrooms and appalling living conditions.
Food was scarce.
Children had to steal food for themselves and their families, but only enough to fight off starvation.
Sometimes what they stole was still not enough.
Many adults and children died from starvation in the ghettos.
Survivor Lily Fenster recalls the death of her little sister from starvation.
The third sister died. I think it was spring. She just fell in sleep and she didn't wake. She was just blue. Her lips were blue and the eyes were, she was a blonde with curly hair. She wore a red little handle, with a shirt. She couldn't walk anymore. She could not walk because when I took her down, she just sort of like, you know, like, I mean, no strength, no life. They took the little body away. We were all standing there. My mother's face, I still see.
Lily's mother would lose yet another child to starvation as well. The next time, she would have to carry the shriveled body to the front gate to be disposed of herself.
Children continued to sneak out of the ghetto at night to find food for their families.
Although the children were returned to the ghetto with food, these endeavors were considered to be an attempt to escape.
The consequences for trying to escape from the ghetto were severe. If you were caught escaping, the punishment was usually death.
Survivor Henry Dorfman describes the punishment of a brother and sister upon returning to the ghetto with food for their family.
I remember the little girl, what could she be? 10, 11, 12 years old. The brother was probably about 17, 18 years old.
They were brought out into the town square to be made an example of for everyone to see.
And just shot him like two dogs right in the head.
Two children were horrifically murdered in front of their mother for getting a piece of bread.
Eventually, the order came to deport Jews from the ghettos to the death camps. The first order came on July 19, 1942.
An order came from the Germans. They were evacuating the ghetto. And I remember we were asked to take our belongings, again, whatever we could carry, and go to the railroad.
People were collected from the ghettos and herded onto cattle cars to be shipped to the concentration camps. Conditions on the cattle cars were worse than the conditions in the ghettos.
On the cattle cars, there was standing room only, no bathrooms, and the journey would take days, not hours.
It was almost impossible to believe how we survived that journey for 3 days. They didn't give us any food. They didn't give us any water. And they sealed these cattle cars. And after probably 3 days, we arrived in this place called Auschwitz.
Upon arrival at the death camps, one of the most common memories among survivors is seeing the crematorium smokestack.
People told us, now we're here, this is it. There are the chimneys, there are the flames. And also, is there a flame of gas burned? We heard about gas chambers. Why would flames be burning? Why would they burn gas? People said, well, that's flames of fat, human fat. They're burning people who were brought in before us.
Families, if they were still together, were usually separated when they arrived. Sometimes men were separated from women, and sometimes women were even separated from their children.
At this point, families said goodbye to each other, sometimes forever.
And right away they gave us directions. Men should go on one side, and women should go on the other side. And immediately, we lost track of my brothers. And I could see them like from far away. They were sort of tall. I could see their faces. My mother took my little brother's hand, and she was told to go on the other side. Excuse me. It all happened so fast that within moments, my mother went on one side, and my sister went with me. And within moments, they took away my brother, my little brother, my mother. And they were told to march towards, that I could see in the background was like a burning furnace.
As Ruth Kent watched her mother and little brother march toward the burning furnaces, she and many others would be marched towards the bathhouses.
There they would be stripped of their clothes, shaved from head to toe, and sent to be disinfected.
For some, the showerheads held water, while for others, they held the deadly gas of the infamous death chambers, especially if you were not seen fit for work.
Those who were not considered fit for work, including babies, were often set directly to death.
We saw big piles of branches and suitcases burning. We thought it was trash being burned. It wasn't until we walked up closer that we heard babies crying. They were burning live babies.
For those who were chosen to live, however temporarily, their lives were about to be changed by the unimaginable traumatic experiences they were about to suffer through at the death camps.
Many times they were beaten to death or shot. Sometimes for something as simple as not answering to their name fast enough at the daily roll calls.
But Gert stated to him, "Why didn't you step out right away?" And he whipped him a couple of times with the whip across the face. And a moment later, he took out the gun and just shot him right then and there. And that was the third day in a camp. And that's how we lost our father.
Starvation and disease were also common in the concentration camps.
The prisoners in the death camps were subjected to many other torturous experiences as well.
They were subjected to human experimentation, poisoned, gassed, beaten, and oftentimes worked to death.
Sometimes they were even buried or thrown into the crematory alive.
The traumatic experiences lasted until finally in 1945, the people in the concentration camps were liberated.
Liberation was an end to the physical pain and suffering of the Holocaust, but would only be the beginning of the survivors' journeys through their emotional recoveries.
Wisdom is often gained through pain and suffering.
Regardless of their pain, the survivors somehow found the courage to tell their stories so that our generation can benefit from their wisdom.
The gateway to the true experience of the Holocaust is through the voices of the survivors.
No book, website, or paper can describe the emotional suffering and pain experienced by them.
We learned that being taken away from your family, your home, and everything that defined you as a human being can be just as painful as physical pain and suffering.
What we learned is the Holocaust was not just a single event.
It did not just occur in concentration camps.
It was a series of tragic events that began with early discrimination against the Jews and did not end until nearly 11 years later, changing the course of their lives forever. Its effects are still felt by survivors and their families today.
It is the real people and their stories that continue to define the Holocaust.
If this tape will help a little bit, even one person, to see how not to be, how not to do, I have accomplished something.
Through survivors like Martin Adler, we have learned how not to be and not to do. He has accomplished his goal by helping us to understand that all human life is to be valued and respected.
And I feel a little bit better by putting it for posterity. That's the least I could do, the least I could do. I survived. Let me tell what would happen to you people. And wherever you are, pray for us, pray for humanity, that something like this should never happen to no human being, ever, ever, ever.
Harding Middle School thanks the University of Michigan, Dearborn, for the use of their Voice Vision archives. Thank you for bringing the Holocaust to life for us. Also, thank you to all of the individuals and organizations who support the University of Michigan's efforts, especially the Claims Conference in New York.